afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Nihan Köseleci. I've been working for the Global Education Monitoring Report team at the UNESCO headquarters in Paris for 4 years now. And before, I'm very pleased to be here with you today, and before we jump into it, I would like to thank our hosts here in Finland, especially Elina and her excellent and very dynamic team to organize this conference over 2 days and putting together excellent presenters. A year ago, in September 2015, the member states of the United Nations have agreed on a new sustainable development agenda. This new sustainable development agenda has 17 goals to be achieved by 2030. And in the new development agenda, we have a global goal on education, which is the sustainable development goal number 4. Member states of the United Nations also outlined a process to follow up and review progress, both globally and by goal. Today, I'm going to go over some of the highlights from the first report in a 15-year series to monitor progress on education in the new sustainable development agenda. So before that, I would like to set the stage a bit. The Sustainable Development Goals are the successor to Millennium Development Goals, which guided the international community from 2000 to 2015. But now, with the new agenda, we need to remember two key aspects. The first one is that Sustainable Development Goals are much more specific to preserving key aspects of our planet, while Millennium Development Goals were much more focusing on all aspects of human development. And we had also a parallel agenda, which was the Rio process on environmental sustainability. So what this new agenda does is to merge these Millennium Development Goals agenda, which is on human development, and also environmental sustainability agenda. The second key aspect we need to remember is that sustainable development goals are universal, which means that Millennium Development Goals were much more focusing on poorer countries, on developing countries. So richer countries could say, is not really entirely our agenda, we could just be enough to fund it. While now we have a different one, and we know that this new agenda requires that every country, rich or poor, has an obligation to be an introspective and ask themselves, are we truly making progress as a society? Goal 4 on education calls for inclusive and equitable quality education for all. The goal also places the emphasis on lifelong learning, meaning creating opportunities for people to continue growing and learning at every phase in their lives. Goal 4, as we will go over in a couple of slides, Goal 4 on education has seven targets, main targets, and then Goal 4 has also 3 means of implementation that I will mention in a couple of minutes. So the Global Education Monitoring Report, that previously called Global Monitoring Report, the Global Education Monitoring Report, this is the report that you will hear about today, plays a central role in keeping track of what's going on throughout the world. We've been providing an annual report since 2002 to track progress in the Education for All agenda. And now we will be providing an annual report until 2030 to track progress in Sustainable Development Goal 4 agenda, but also in other goals that have a specific component on education, like SDG 8 or SDG 12. So the report, we are researchers, so we write. So the report we produced is like 500 pages. In general, we don't expect all people read cover to cover the report, except for those who write and who are passionate and have had time. So for this is available as an online report. And we produced also a summary, which is more reasonable, 60 pages, and with some key messages and specific examples. So in general, that's what people prefer to keep. But if you're on the go and you want something to put in your pocket, we have a leaflet that we brought from Paris. And this is the final thing. So if you want to have a good bedtime reading for yourself or for your kids, that's what I did with my kids for lifelong learning issues, so that we produced a comic. and also a cartoon, which is on our website. So this is quite handy and to communicate the key messages. So this huge report is structured into two parts. We have one part which is about monitoring. So what we call monitoring is where we track progress. So we take one by one on the goals and the indicators associated with these goals, and we say, so what's happening in the world? And now our mandate, as I said, it's now covering more and more countries, because it's not only about developing countries and developed countries. So we try to have a nationally, globally representative report. And we have also another section, another part, which we call the thematic part. And the thematic section, each year we try to dive deep to investigate a particular theme. For instance, for 2016 report, appropriately so, it was the role of education in making societies more sustainable. And for 2017 report, it will be, the theme will be about accountability in education, and 2018 migration and education. So I will start with the first monitoring section. And here are the first three targets. And they essentially monitor participation from early childhood through adult education. What we call target 4.1 is about universal primary and secondary education. So here you can see also the difference between the previous development and education agenda is that now we are going a step forward. We are not talking only about primary education, but we are also talking about secondary education. So what we call 4.2 is about early childhood care and education. And here too, there is a slight difference, is that we are putting more and more the focus about early childhood development, not only about education indicators, but about how children are developmentally on track or not. And target 4.3 goes for anything beyond secondary, general secondary education, which is technical training, university, and continuing education. It's important also to note that these targets recognize the role that non-formal education plays. See, a key message, we can go in the discussion if you have any technical questions how we use the indicators and how indicators were formulated, we can have a technical discussion, but I will be very brief here. A key message from evaluating these targets this year is that although participation at all levels has been increasing since 2000, our main challenge is improving equity and inclusivity. So we have still 263 million children, adolescents, and young people who are out of school. And what we show is that mainly these children, adolescents, and young people are coming from the poorest and most vulnerable segments of the population. And another similar finding is coming from target 4.3, is that less than 1% of the poorest young people do complete tertiary education. Taking a look at the next three targets, we can see that the attention shifts to outcomes and quality. So the questions we are asking is, what kind of skills are students receiving? Are boys and girls getting equal treatment in school? Are adults equipped with the reading skills they need to navigate in the 21st century? The key message is that skills really carry our students through the rest of their lives. For the fourth target on skills for work, 4.4, we have found that having strong reading skills doubles the probability of having a decent job. Target 4.5 on equity, and which is really one of the most important targets of this agenda, whose key message is leaving no one behind. So target 4.5 is majorly important. Reminds us that if we are going to build sustainable societies, we have to make sure that all young people, regardless of their socioeconomic status, regardless of their gender, of the language they speak at home, of their migration status or ethnicity, have access to equal and same opportunities. What what we show is that right now in 2014, only 63% of countries achieve gender parity in primary education. And here I want to stop because this indicator was one of the goals that was supposed to be achieved in 2005. Because when the agenda was set in 2000, they said, okay, we will reach gender parity by 2005. It will not be even by 2015. And we can see that even when we are in 2015, we have still 63% of countries that reached gender parity in primary education. And this gets even worse at the upper levels of education, 46% in lower secondary education and 23% in upper secondary education. And in general, disparities in education tend to get worse when you look at outcomes by socioeconomic status. And here we give an example. Right now, for every 100 richest youth, only 36 of the poorest youth are completing primary education. These differences are growing instead of decreasing, and this is not only in developing countries, but we can see it also in European and also in North American countries that disparities tend to grow. The final slide covers the last four targets. And they collectively review what we need in order to make all of this happen. Curriculum that teaches students about sustainable development and global citizenship. Good schools, scholarships for continuing studies, and of course, high-quality teachers. Target 4.7 is a major innovation also of this new agenda on sustainable development and global citizenship, because now we are much more looking at the content of education, what education has in its content, what curriculum has in its content, what textbooks, what teacher education programs have in their contents. And it is also very challenging target to monitor from a measurement point of view, because when you look, and if you look at the summary, we have also the formulation of each target. And if you look at the formulation of target 4.7, we talk about human rights, we talk about gender equality, we talk about non-violence, peace, and you can say from a measurement point of view, but how you want to monitor all this globally? I mean, even in this room, I'm sure we have a different definition of global citizenship. So It has been and it will be a challenge for us to monitor this. As a first attempt, what we did is that we took over 110 national curriculum framework from 78 countries, and we decided to develop a coding scheme to see to which extent national curriculum frameworks mention some of the keywords in the target. And for instance, what we show is that half of the national curriculum frameworks make no mention of climate change. And when you look at the gender equality, and this is something that all the international community has been advocating since 2000, when you see it is only half of the curricula mention gender equality and 15% gender empowerment. In general, national curriculum frameworks are even more silent about issues like global identity, global citizenship. And we did a similar exercise on textbooks that you can find the results in the report. So target 4.C highlights the importance of raising the quality of teachers at all levels, especially early childhood. In 2014, 82% of teachers had the minimum qualification required to teach in primary education compared to over 90% in primary and secondary education. The report outlines six key steps that countries should take to strengthen national monitoring of education in the next 3 to 5 years. The first one is that countries are not always aware of the extent of education inequality. We know that there are several initiatives like education management information systems within national education ministries, but we believe that national statistical agencies can produce highly relevant information for the monitoring of education, and notably through household or labor force surveys. But for this, ministries of education should be more involved in the design of such surveys and in the use of their results. The second recommendation is that countries should establish or improve the quality of national learning assessment systems to monitor a range of learning outcomes. And here I would like to underline a range of learning outcomes, because we cannot just say, okay, we will monitor only literacy and numeracy, and we will then narrow the curriculum, and we will just expect that kids just read and write. No, in a range of learning outcomes. So national learning assessment systems should have this duty of monitor a range of learning outcomes. And we need to make sure also the measurement, because we always talk about measurement, but the measurement should be also meaningful for the measured one. So for this, we need to make sure that such assessments are used by curriculum developers, are used by teachers, are used by administrators, and others to improve learning. They should also, and in countries where especially you have a high number of out-of-school children, learning assessments should also ensure that they monitor children who are out of school. And we have a couple of initiatives that are like household surveys coming from India, from Pakistan, from Nigeria, that are trying to monitor the learning outcomes of out-of-school children. The third recommendation is that assessing the quality of education cannot be reduced to learning outcomes. It should also include that looking policies, curricula, textbooks, and teacher education programs, judging them against the way they address tolerance, human rights, and sustainability. The fourth recommendation is that schooling alone cannot deliver all the expected outcomes from improved education by 2030. We need to focus on lifelong learning, yet at present, education opportunities available to adults are barely being monitored at all. Fifth recommendation is that countries should engage in debates and exchange ideas on good practices of key education policies, for example, how to address disadvantage in education. And we have some encouraging examples from Latin America and from Europe who could support this kind of peer exchanges. And finally, countries should consider adopting a national education accounts approach to help monitoring education spending. And this is not only from a government's perspective or a donor's perspective, but also from households. Our previous analysis have shown that, in general, households carry a huge burden in terms of financing the education of their children. And having a simple approach, what governments spend on it, what donors spend on it, will not give us the complete picture on education financing. So we believe that if we have a national education accounts approach, this could provide information as to whether the costs are shared fairly. The 2016 Global Education Monitoring Report has also assessed the likelihood of achieving the target of universally primary and secondary completion by 2030. And here our message is stark. If past rates continue, not even the education for all goal of universal primary completion would be achieved by 2030, but instead 2042. And rather, the world is set to achieve universal secondary completion half a century late. And on this slide, you can see that most disadvantaged continent, region, is sub-Saharan Africa, where we will have, if pass rates continue, we will achieve universal primary completion by 2080, and universal upper secondary completion will be achieved only by next century. So the second part of the Global Education Monitoring Report looks at the multiple links and synergies between education and the other 16 goals on the Sustainable Development Agenda. As you can see, we grouped them into six P chapters, focusing on the planet, prosperity, people, peace, place, and partnerships. And under each chapter, you could see to which sustainable development goal this chapter will correspond on. As I mentioned at the very beginning, the Sustainable Development Agenda draws together those working on all aspects of human development and the environment for the first time. This is why the first cross-sectoral links our report explores are between education and environmental sustainability. Education can help with the shift to a more sustainable way of living. It shapes values and perspectives and is proven to be the best tool for climate change awareness. Schools help students understand a given environmental problem, its consequences, and types of action required to address it. But one key takeaway is that we must stop thinking of learning as something happening only in school if we are to start living in a more sustainable manner. Certainly, we accept that schools should become more green, should change their pedagogy, link up with communities, and increase their connections with the nature. But government agencies, religious organizations, non-profit and community groups, labor unions, and private sectors can all help change individual and collective behavior. Traditional, especially indigenous knowledge in such areas as agriculture, food production and conservation has played an important role in environmental sustainability for centuries. It has recently contributed to disaster early warning systems, climate change adaptation and resilience. The second chapter makes the point that education has a role for making production and consumption sustainable, for supplying skills for the creation of green industry, and orienting higher education and research towards green innovation. Education can also protect against abusive informal labor and working poverty, ensuring that economic growth does leave anyone behind. Through research and innovative developments, education can support the shift to green growth. It is estimated that governments need to increase energy research and development by up to fivefold annually to achieve a quick transition to low carbon intensity. And of course, an economic sector in urgent need of becoming more sustainable is agriculture, which accounts for 33% of greenhouse gas emissions. The third chapter starts by underlining that inclusive social development requires universal provision of critical services such as education, health, water, sanitation, energy, transport, and housing. Yet if we look at the low-income countries, only 28% had access to sanitation facilities, 25% had access to electricity, and 67% made it to the last grade of primary education. Inclusive social development demands taking a holistic approach to address multidimensional poverty challenges. Educating women is at the heart of social development. More educated mothers are more likely to seek help during pregnancy and childbirth and are better able to feed their children well and keep them in good health. Our projections show that in sub-Saharan Africa, if all women achieved universal secondary education, it would save up to 3.5 million children's lives in the decade beginning in 2015. But educating women is going beyond their health benefits. Studies from different countries and contexts have also shown how education increases women's political empowerment. This should be a major global priority. In 2014, women made up only 22% of national assemblies. Health and nutrition are essential for education. They condition children's ability to attend school and learn, and their families' ability to support them. In Kenya, girls who received deworming treatment were 25% more likely to pass the national primary school exam. The fourth chapter looks at the linkages between education and conflict. We know that persistent violence and armed conflict undermine personal security and well-being. Preventing violence and achieving sustainable peace require democratic and representative institutions and especially a well-functioning justice system. Education has proven to be a key element in expanding political participation, inclusion, advocacy, and democracy. Of course, we will not say that education is the major cause of conflicts in the world. Instead, what we say is that education can be a powerful preventative tool for violence and armed conflict. We analyzed data from 100 countries, and what we show is that countries with a wider education gaps are more likely to be in conflict. Yet, when you look at the peace agreements, what you see is that the issue has not been given proper attention. Of all peace agreements signed between 1989 and 2005, almost one-third made no mention of education at all. Education can also lead to more constructive political processes and more peaceful protests by helping people participate in politics and access political information. Across 102 countries, adults with a tertiary education were 60% more likely to request information from the government than those with a primary education or less. A functioning justice system is also critical for sustaining peaceful societies. In 2011, in the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, tertiary education significantly increased the extent to which people were informed about the judicial reform and its consequences. The fifth chapter starts by showing how much faster urbanization is putting a strain on education systems. More than one-third of urban residents in lower-income countries live in slums or shantytowns in city center or in urban peripheries. Many slums are characterized by poor access to basic services, including education, and especially to education that is publicly provided. By late 2014, 6 out of 10 refugees lived in urban areas. In Turkey, only 30% of refugees in urban areas are enrolled in school. Meanwhile, migrants to cities looking for employment face challenges such as discrimination, language barriers, unemployment, and exploitation in the informal economy. Inviting education planners to the table in discussions around urban policies would help address unequal access to quality public schools and the uneven distribution of quality teachers by area. Teacher preparation and mentoring programs can reduce discriminatory attitudes that exacerbate social marginalization and exclusion through cities. Cities can attract human capital and foreign direct investment by positioning themselves as global hubs for higher education, skills, talent, knowledge, and innovation. Education can also help cities to become green. We have the examples from Curitiba in Brazil and Medellin in Colombia that are both cities that used education initiatives to become among the greenest cities in the world. Many cities are expanding cycling programs as a form of green transportation. In Denmark, schools encourage cycling and teach children from a young age safe cycling habits. The final chapter of this report pays special attention to the importance of developing integrated approaches to solve complex collective problems. However, the notion of integrated planning still exists mostly on paper, as its potential benefits are not fully realized. Very few countries have genuinely pushed for integrated actions and budgets. Without strong political incentives and adequate financial backing, planning and implementation in most contexts will not change their ways of working. One key barrier standing in the way of progress is the persistent finance gap for all our development goals, including for education. At least 35 countries from different parts of the world spend less than both minimum thresholds proposed in the Incheon Declaration in 2015, namely 4% of GDP and 15% of total public expenditure. Mobilizing domestic resources will be critical at this stage. In addition, what this report shows is that aid is not being allocated to those facing the biggest education challenges. Rather, it is frequently associated with donors' trade interest. To reach our goals, aid must be better aligned with those with helping those most in need. And I think this graph quite is interesting because it illustrates the gap between aid to education and the actual need. So if you compare Chad and Mongolia, for instance, what you see is in the horizontal axis the primary completion rates. And what you can see the difference, Mongolia is only almost 100%, and Chad should be like 27%. And when you compare these statistics to the amount of aid to basic education these two countries received is rather striking. Mongolia received $45 per child, while Chad received less than $5 per child, while their education needs are completely different. And you can see, you can do the same comparison between Liberia and Mauritania, for instance, with the same level of primary completion and with huge differences in terms of aid they received. So we have a number of recommendations, 5 that are more general and 1 that would be more about education. So the first one is support synergies and collaborations across all sectors and partners. Because for the moment, in many countries, sectors and ministries, even within the same education ministries, people tend to work in silos. And this also implies a waste of resources and ineffectiveness of efforts. So what this report suggests is a collaboration and synergy across all sectors and partners. Second is the government needs to view formal and non-formal education as key to achieve the other sustainable development goals. Because in the other sustainable development goals and in other sectors, people need capacity building. And education sector could give this capacity to other sectors. Education can help reduce income inequality, but not on its own. Expanding access by marginalized groups to good quality primary and secondary education will help ensure decent incomes and reduce disparity. Yet we need also changes to labor market regulation and technology not to penalize workers in less secure jobs, and especially in the informal sector. The fourth recommendation is education systems need increased and predictable financing to universalize primary and secondary education, to increase the numbers of qualified, knowledgeable, and motivated teachers, to provide good quality education to marginalized populations, and to prepare the young children to the impact of climate change, natural disasters, and the possibility of protracted conflict. And the final recommendation under this is that among many benefits of improving in equity in education, universal primary and secondary education, especially for girls, would curtail population growth, transform social norms and practices across generations, and limit the burden on the planet. And the final recommendation is for ourselves working on the education sector, is we need to rethink which education we want and which education we need, and which learning it will be needed to achieve this very ambitious 2030 agenda. The first recommendation is that educational systems should address both medium and long-term needs and implications of sustainable growth. The second one is that civic, peace, and sustainability education programs can be important levers for SDG progress. Thank you for listening. And as you see, the findings of and the recommendations of this report is addressing to a large number of audiences. So we will need all your support in helping us disseminate this widely. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the effective time use. And we had a very good briefing of the report. What we would like to do now is to welcome questions from you. It is, you have promised to respond to all our questions, all our difficult questions, but the condition is that our support is needed, so we have to think how we contribute also, how we help the work. And And we do have microphones around, so please use microphones when you have questions. So let's wait for the microphone, please.
It's just a comment. I think you mentioned a very important point about the issue of financing, especially in the developing countries, that maybe most times, maybe the amount of money or aid that is given looks very large, but when you look actually in per capita terms, actually it's not very, very, very enough. Yeah, so I think that's one of the major problems that we have, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. And that's just what I want to say.
Yeah, thank you. I think this has been always one of our points, is that it's not only enough to give, and we need financing because we have a huge financing gap to achieve all these targets, but also how we use aid, how we target the most in need. And this is only an example, but within a country, you can see different examples at levels of education or even at which parts of population you target the aid. So, yeah, thank you.
Yes, we have one question here and then one over there. First here.
Thank you. I'm Outi Perauhto from Finnish Refugee Council, and I was very pleased to listen all this presentation. And well, we worked with the post-migration, certainly, and mainly with adult education in refugee settings and so on. And this is more comment, not kind of a question. And I was just... it was all the time I was kind of, yes, so much agreeing how much the education really can impact for the diverse issues and kind of also for starting the new life in the refugee and the returning situation and kind of post-conflict areas, and also when we also talk about the adults, and when there was about the women. And there was mentioned that the secondary education, when they reach the secondary education, there is a huge impact also for their children and so. And I was just reflecting, we don't have the official data. Well, of course, we have the monitorings and evaluations and this kind of numeric information. But what we already can see, very much in Liberia and Sierra Leone especially, and in Uganda, that already the primary, when the adults learn the basics with the functionality and including the other thematic topics in the learning, it really, when the women, they learn the right their names and they know the importance of the education first time in their lives, they really look at their girls, they stay in the school. They are really kind of, they do almost whatever to keep daughters, especially because they don't want the same situation for their daughters anymore. And when I was really looking at this Mauritania and Liberia, well, I don't want to comment too much about the reasons that probably can be in there, but especially in Liberia, where the adult education is very, very kind of in low level, and there is over 70% of the adults are illiterate. So I think there very often we have saying that if the adults don't know, if they are illiterate, they don't know deeply in their heart the meaning of the schooling and the education. So it's so much easier to put the children for the farms. So it can be certainly also one, this how much adults are literate, and the impact is really, really big there. And that was just a small comment. And thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. I think you touched on a very good point and very relevant on refugee education. And we recently released a policy paper on refugee education in May for the World Humanitarian Forum in Istanbul. And actually, one of the biggest challenges from a monitoring perspective is that we miss data. The only data that we have, more or less reliable, is coming from camps, from UNHCR data. And what we see is that most of these refugee populations, they live outside of camps in urban areas. And it's very difficult for us to get the reliable data on it. And that's why one of the recommendations that UNHCR does is to integrate as much as country systems can do, integrate them in the national education system so that we can monitor what's going on. And also for them, because when you see the length of exile is like 20 years, so people are not there just for 2 months, are likely to spend all their lives there. So they need hopes and they need the skills to move on. So this is quite a difficult point to raise because we don't have the data, and even disaggregated data we have even less. But what we see, for instance, to come back to the education of women, what we see is in Lebanon, I'm sure you follow this, with the influx of refugees, we have a huge increase in the number of early marriages, and this is quite a big issue. People in general, they say, because we need to send out our daughters because first we don't have enough resources, but second also there's a security issue, so they are likely to be safer if they get married a bit early, which is completely because we know that there are all the violence issues when you get married early. So this is quite a complex and multifaceted issue. Yeah, we're very difficult to monitor.
So when we're talking about children being aware of environmental changes, we're looking at all the kids having access to environmental science. For a fact, I'm sure that in my country, 100% of the students have access to it. But what is the level of quality that is being implemented? Like, are these children really learning what environmental changes? Are they being able to support to reach one of the global goals? So this is just the concern.
Yeah. This is another... I think all this debate about access and quality is just getting transposed to another level. Okay, you can do environmental education, but to which extent? And I've been reading this excellent paper from Radhika Iyengar on India, actually, how environmental education is not responding to the needs, because environmental education is sometimes presented as scientific concepts, only scientific concepts, and all the sociocultural dimensions of environment and environmental-related problems are completely neglected. And she was taking an example from India, the Bhopal gas tragedy in 1994. And she was telling, in environmental education class, you theoretically would expect that they contextualize all these environmental problems and link it to the gas story, but there was nothing about this. So, of course, you can have environmental education, but if it's not really... And the same example comes from Portugal, for instance. When you look at Portugal books about pollution, they will talk about pollution as if something that human cannot do anything about, and... But it's not this. So yes, of course, the quality and the way we deal with the environment is very important. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm a master's student, the University of Uvascular. Actually, I have two questions and one worry. Why is this aid in education declining from your findings? What did you find out that is causing the aid in education to decline? And what can be done to ensure this effective targeting in aid in education? If you find out that, well, the aid is not balanced from your finding, what do you think can be done so that this aid can somehow be balanced? Then gender equality, I wish to find out, is it just gender equality in education or gender equality as a whole? And lastly, this inclusive curriculum, what is your office in France, for example, doing to ensure this effective For example, we talked about climate change. Most curriculums don't talk about climate change, global citizenship, and to a lesser degree, gender equality. What do you think we can do to improve this in our curriculums? Thank you.
Okay, I'll start by the last two questions that seem more in line. So gender equality, so we have gender parity, we have gender equality. And when you look to the first agenda between 2000 and 2015, Education for All agenda, mainly focused on gender parity and having the same number of boys and girls in school. What we now see with this broad agenda, we are trying, and also from a measurement perspective, we are trying to go beyond it. So it's gender equality in general. Gender equality in and through education. That's how we can call it. And that's why, for instance, when you look at gender equality, we published at the beginning of October a gender review. Actually, I would highly recommend you to go there, and because it's going beyond gender parity, and it's looking at how gender equality can be measured. For instance, it's also about female staff in school management. What we show is that female staff in school management is decreasing, highly decreasing with levels of education. This is a way also of looking at gender equality. Also female staff in teaching staff. This is a way of looking at gender equality. How much time, how many times textbooks deal with gender issues? This is a way of looking at gender equality. And to link to your question, what we do is, and this will be a paper coming out in December, we are analyzing a couple of dozen of textbooks around the world, and we try to see how textbooks are dealing with stereotypes, and not only about gender issues, but about migrant issues, about children with disabilities, and in general, textbooks prefer not to deal, for instance, with children with disabilities. But this is a way of discriminating. Because in general, what you don't teach can hurt as much as what you teach. So if you don't talk about people with disabilities, LGBT people, or sometimes you just put women in some very particular household tasks and men outside and working. And this is a way of exacerbating gender inequality. And to your question of what we are doing, so we are a monitoring report, we are researchers, and we are not really working on the field. But what we are doing is this kind of policy papers and blogs and also reports to highlight and to take actually forward the discussion on gender equality. So what we do is we advocate that when we talk about gender equality, it's not about numbers of kids, number of boys and girls in school, but is what you put in your textbooks. Is also how teachers in the classroom are dealing with boys and girls. And this could be also in favor of boys and in favor of girls, because the literature says that sometimes teachers are more hard with boys. They tend to punish them more or they tend to overlook them more. It happens. So it's not only about girls, but it's also about boys. So what we are trying to do is to publish this kind of studies to push countries to think about their teachers, about their teachers' training, about their textbooks. And sometimes it can work, because even a blog that we did for 8th of March this year, it was specifically on gender equality, gender stereotype in textbooks. And you cannot imagine the reaction that we got. People were writing letters and they were trying to react to this blog, actually, from Tunisia, from Turkey. We had a lot of reactions from the government. So for aid to education, this is complete, and what can be done to ensure the effectiveness. So aid to education has been declining since 2012. It stagnated, then it started to decline. Now it started to increase a bit, if I'm not wrong about the numbers, but it never reached the peak level of before 2010. So of course there is there's the impact of the economic crisis in this, so we cannot deny it. But what we see in the 2015 report is that there was also a loss of momentum at some point from donor countries, because when you see at the beginning of the 2000 the EFA agenda started, then you see a lot of countries that, you know, giving a lot of money, aid, and at the end of the decade, towards 2015, you saw a slowing down of this momentum. So I think here our role is to keep the momentum, because now there is another momentum coming with the new agenda, and we need to keep this momentum and try to raise more funds for education. And then there is GPE. I don't know if you heard about GPE, Global Partnership for Education. This is also a way of pooling the money and trying to distribute. And another initiatives that you may be interested, it came out in World Humanitarian Forum in Istanbul, Education Cannot Wait Fund, which we'll see how it will go, but it's a way of channeling resources to the most in need. So these are the international initiatives that are worth following, and that's what we are doing. But then there are also national initiatives, how nationally programs can distribute the available resources. And here literature is pretty mixed. I can give you a list of references about school redistribution policies. Yes. There's another one.
Hello. Is that okay? So if I remember correctly, we didn't meet the Millennium Development Goals last year, and some of your slides said that universal kind of primary and secondary education wouldn't be achieved till 2080, 2100. So do you think 2030 is like an achievable kind of realistic goal, or is it just hopeful?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's quite interesting that this question is coming up to every launch I go, and from a very diverse perspective, and it's the first time such a young person is asking the question, so I'm happy. So it's quite a difficult question. Each time I just stop and say, yes, you may be right. But at the same time, if you don't have these aspirational goals, then you don't achieve anything. And now we are pushing for this agenda, and there are a lot of people who say, okay, we didn't achieve MDG agenda or EFA agenda. But what we show in 2015 report, because we review all the progress for our 2015 last report of the series, all the progress since 2000, and what happened in most of the goals. And what we show is that because the Education for All movement was there, we managed to achieve a bit more than if the movement was not there. So as I was telling about education aid, so there was a momentum at the beginning, and this momentum helped really a lot of children to go to school. If you look at the, unfortunately I don't have the slides, but if you look at the trend of out-of-school population, you can see a huge decrease in the number of out-of-school kids, especially at the first part of the 2000s. And then it stagnates after 2007. So you still need these aspirational targets to hold accountable international community what they are doing with their aid financing, but also to hold accountable governments how they are dealing with education challenges. So this is a way, and this report, I think, is also a way to hold accountable both international community and governments.
Thank you very much for being here. I'll probably start as a comment and maybe it'll turn into a question. I'm not sure. I was just inspired by this little cartoon that's there in this booklet. And something I'm often passionate about and I try to observe and work towards is this theme called working together. And when I look at all these goals, I see somewhere the baseline of most goals or all these goals is people coming together cooperatively, working towards the same thing with the same intensity, with the same aim. And often I find we're all, many of us are students here or from the field of education, and I find people who are so-called educated sometimes seem to be very individualistic in their thinking than thinking collectively. Probably it's my own experience, or I'm biased in this, but I feel sometimes we fail to come together as individuals in working towards a common thing. I want probably people to comment, or you to comment on how much do you feel education curriculums or frameworks are actually oriented towards building a collective wisdom or collective thinking among people and moving in that direction?
Yes, I think I will respond in two ways. The first one is that this is one of the major differences with this new agenda, is that it's bringing really very sharply the content of education. And specifically, there is this target 4.7 on education for sustainable development and global citizenship. And global citizenship means actually also to think globally and to try to be to develop skills that would allow you to navigate in the global world, but not only in an OECD term, but also, I mean, not only in terms of economic productivity, but also how to be to promote a peaceful society, a just society, a sustainable. So I think there is one innovation in the agenda politically that we start to think about these terms. The second one, unfortunately, and this was one of the findings that I showed when we tried to monitor some aspects of 4.7, is that curriculums are not still there. And this is not a problem of developed country issue. And if you take the particular example of the United Kingdom, is that you see that curricula are quite silent about global citizenship and global identity issues. France is doing slightly much better, but they are more focused on European identity issues. So no, curriculum and the curriculum frameworks have still a long way to go. Or when you look at the textbooks in Austria, there is a study, for instance, that looked at the textbooks, and they see that migration is basically presented as a problem. This is the migrants, our problem. And of course, these are, you know, lower secondary and upper secondary school textbooks and curriculum, and you see how they shape young people's mind. So yeah, I agree with you that curricula have a lot of, but it's a good sign that at least now we have a tool to advocate for this, that we need to change something in the way we see education.
In gender equality issues, is there any specific recommendation for including gender-related topics in the curricula as a concrete subject of study? Because in my opinion, it's not enough to just teach the same with a different approach, maybe with a different assessment.
Yep, Thomas. There are sometimes some topics, for instance, and this is mainly in sub-Saharan Africa, comprehensive sexuality education, which will have a gender equality dimension, which will deal with gender equality issues. But yes, I think it could be a good solution. But I'm not sure if it's enough to just include a topic on gender equality if you don't touch in other textbooks or other curricula, all the stereotype against. And this includes even mathematics, you know. And I was mentioning children with disabilities, or I think it's not only about gender equality, for instance, all these stereotypes, but also is about other minorities. How many times you mention a minority? How many times you mention you show a photo of a children with disabilities? And what we, I think it was in South Africa, out of 40 books they analyzed, they only found 2 photos of people with disabilities. Or gender equality, for instance, in France, they did this excellent study, and I don't know if you are following, but we are in the middle of this whole discussion about gender theory and all these things. And so, and they did this excellent study to see, okay, we are increasing the number of photos, for instance, in textbooks, with women doing much more professional work. But when you compare, it was incredible comparison between the number of times women were associated with being a witch and men associated being a magician. And this is very, delicate comparison that you don't think really when you read. But, you know, it's slowly working and you don't really necessarily pay attention. But how much time? It was like 150 times women were associated being with a witch, while compared with 20 times for men. You know, and men are magicians. Now, this kind of slow things that publishers actually should be accompanied to write the textbooks and to be careful about all the stereotypes.
I will take you back to the previous question on our failure to achieve the Millennium Development Goals. Now, there is already a strong criticism on this broad sustainable development goals, whether it is achievable or not. The question is, if we have failed in achieving the Millennium Development Goals, what is new now? What new strategy are we devising to achieve this one? But also, the problem has been the issue of resources. Now we talk education for people, education for the planet, our global citizenship, education for all. But the critical question is, are we sharing our global resources equally? We know how much resources is spent in the military, for instance. And when we think the way we are using our global resources, if we seriously mean this is our global humanity, shouldn't we think how we use our global resources in dealing all these ambitious goals? Another point I want to make is, wouldn't it be much better to have probably an achievable ambition? Probably take few points at a time, and then you make sure with all the resources, with all the mechanisms, with all the necessary institutions in achieving them, and then you can go ahead, instead of probably repeating some of the previous failures, because this is a broad ambition, and already now there are a lot of suspicions or apprehensions whether this is achievable.
Yes, I think in terms of ambition, I think we all agree that this is an ambitious agenda. This is a too ambitious agenda. But I think there are some also major differences between the previous one and this one for the moment. And this one and our report is the first time, and we took like 2 years to write this report. It was an incredible amount of work, is that we want to, the new agenda now promotes an idea of working together and recognizes that one of the failures of the previous agenda, it was first, yes, you are right, there was a lack of resources. But second, there was a lack of coordination too. And this is also in our 2015 report, this was one of the major points that we said, is that there is a problem of coordination in terms of education, global education governance. And this is something we recognize in the 2015 report. And now with this new agenda, and the report is underlining it, is that we need to work together. You cannot, and I've been to a conference on urban planning in the French Development Agency, for instance, and they are dealing with all kinds of issues, infrastructure, whether, and I haven't heard a whole day education. And this is, you know, if you work in this kind of silos, of course you will replicate the mistakes of the previous agenda, and that's why I think this is one of the major differences with the new agenda, is that we are trying to promote a collaboration across sectors and across institutions. To your questions to whether or not we shouldn't have like a stepping stone to go up, I think this links also to the other specificity of this new agenda, is that this agenda is supposed to be universal. So all these targets are not only about developing countries, are also about developed countries. So they should ask themselves about equity issues too, whether migrant children are doing as good as non-migrant children, etc. So this is a universal agenda. And I do believe that these targets are certainly aspirational, but without these targets being aspirational, we are likely to be in a worse situation in 2030 than what we will be in 2030, because now at least we have a tool to mobilize resources. And another, I think, interesting point of this agenda was the involvement of member states, because the MDG agenda was seen, or EFA agenda was seen, much more a top-down approach. But now, actually, member states have contributed and they have outlined their national program, national progress in this new SDG agenda and SDG 4 agenda. So I remain optimistic. I believe in these aspirational targets.
Hello.
Sorry. How are you? So who's it? Oh, me? Okay.
So, hello. Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. As far as I study political science, so I'm not that, I don't have that large knowledge when it comes to education. But what kind of what came to my mind, because now we are discussing the global hegemonic discourse when it comes to development, and as I study development here. And so, what my question is, like, what is the way of promoting an education if it's by promoting like a general pattern of education based on the Western curriculum when it comes to in terms of subjects taught at school and ways of teaching, which is being regarded as more feasible, or is it more about promoting grassroots consultations with the local governments about what subjects are suitable and feasible for that particular country and the ways they should be taught? As in my opinion, every state society is different, and hence they all need individual approach, and so there is, yeah. So, you know, in my opinion, universal approach is not feasible or possible even. So if you can comment on it.
Yeah, I think it was one of the challenges, for instance, in monitoring 4.7, as I mentioned. What do we mean by global citizenship? I mean, you know, this is practically impossible to come up with a single definition on global citizenship. And actually, what we did is to monitor, because our mandate is to global this target. We were mandated by the, you know, member states of the United Nations to monitor it. So if we don't find a way to monitor it, we will be failing. We have to. But at the same time, what we say is that, okay, all these concepts are quite context specific. So, and especially perhaps in the curricula, you can track down, you know, how many times they mention human rights, how many, perhaps this one measurement approach you can mentor. But in the target, there is also knowledge and skills to promote sustainable development. So what are the knowledge and skills? What are the attitudes, knowledge, skills that could be the attributes of a global citizen? This is certainly very different in Latin America, in Asia, in Middle East, in Central and Eastern Europe. And there are initiatives actually for measuring it. For instance, in Southeast Learning Matrix, I think Southeast Asia Learning Matrix, that they are coming up with some definitions at the regional level. They are, and this is a big consultation that has been going on since 2014, I guess. They will be piloting 2017. It's a UNICEF and UNESCO. I'm not sure to which extent they're involved, but it's basically a UNICEF initiative. They are deciding regionally at the regional level what makes sense to be a global citizen. And they will be collecting data, and they will come up with their, without ranking countries, because they're, in general, countries are very much worried. They are always worried to be already ranked in terms of learning outcomes. There's already this worry. And imagine that someone is ranking you according to whether or not you are a global citizen. So countries are a bit worried about this. So without ranking countries, they will come up with some regional. But having said that, I think our report never, and this new agenda, I think, recognized the national efforts. And if you go over 4.7 under monitoring, you will see that we managed to cover a lot of national assessments. That's why one of the recommendations is to also improve national assessment systems.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. I'm really glad that the goals are set in the way they are, actually. I'm really happy with it. And but I think it's difficult to achieve them in 2030. But we'll see, like in 15 years, where we'll be. But I think, like, my main point is about the actual implementation of all the points. Like, I read the summary, and I think I read at least 8 points that we should implement in education, in the curriculum, or in any way in education. But how are we going to do that? Like, we have already such a big agenda for our education system. Like, we already need to teach mathematics, language, like everything else, and we just keep adding other subjects. So are we going to remove a few existing subjects, or are we going to add them to the list? What's the concrete planning for that?
Yeah, I'm not a curriculum developer personally, but I could tell you what we would have in mind. But first of all, some of these issues could be cross-cutting issues. I mean, when you talk about gender equality, when you talk about global citizenship, when you talk about tolerance, and, you know, these can be issues that are cross-cutting. So this could be, gender equality could be better highlighted in a mathematics textbook or in natural science, like I was telling about environmental education, for instance. Then you could improve the way you present environmental education, putting more emphasis on sociocultural dimensions, or linking to contextualizing it. If you talk about India, linking to a tragedy that happened, this kind of more diluting it in the curricula or in the way that it is taught in the classroom. If you look also, and most of it has to do, and of course I think teachers are overloaded already, so we wouldn't, you know, add, okay, teach this. That's why I think teacher training, for instance, gender-sensitive training, it could be that if you manage to deal this within the classroom and in classroom interactions, you don't need to add another topic in the curricula, perhaps. And another thing that I would like to mention is one of the main ideas of this report and of this agenda is that education does not happen only in the classroom. And you have all these whole school approaches that you don't need to overburden the curriculum. So, and I'm sure in Finland you are well suited than a Turkish, that how, you know, recycling and all these themes could be integrated in the school life. So, and there's this whole school approach, so how you deal with school, and also extracurricular activities that school organize sometimes. And how we know that there is some literature, if well designed, extracurricular activities could also have an impact on changing people's attitudes and behaviors. So you have various, and depending on the context, as our colleague said, I mean, it depends on the context and on the needs of the country. Of course, if it's a post-conflict country, that would need some, transitional justice, that education should be in the transitional justice issues. You also need some, you know, peace-building courses and peace education. And if it's a more North American country, you need other, this education system will have other needs.
I'm sure we have more comments and questions, but if I don't see any hands raised now, I could ask you, what do you think we should do as a university? We are the oldest, and we always think we are the best here in Finland, but we still try to reach globally. But also here in Finland, we think we play an important role because we are one of the biggest teacher education organizations in the country, and also teaching educational leaders, teacher educators, you name it. And so what do you think is our responsibility? Because this is going to be our discussion in the afternoon, around the roundtable discussion. So we will have a roundtable discussion today at 2:30 after the coffee break. But before we go for the coffee break and before we thank you, what I would like to ask is your opinion. What do you think as a university? Because as a university, we have now invited people from the ministries, etc. We have invited people from non-governmental organizations, so we try to collaborate and reach out. What do you think is our, what should we do? We have the 17 goals, and we are doubting whether we can do that, but what do you think, what should we do now first? We have 15 years, as we have discussed, but where should we start?
Yeah, I think during lunch break we had all this nice discussion with Elina, how much the university is actually valuing collaboration between sectors and also between countries. And I think that this is one way to go, is that we need to collaborate. And with this new agenda, we need to collaborate. And we need to build the capacity. And, you know, the capacity building is one of the major issues, and we cannot be just... Okay, we collect data, we analyze it, and we will be doing this for the next 15 years. No, I mean, we need to build the capacity so that people do collect their data in a quality way and do their analysis, and national level analysis, at regional level analysis. So I think this is one major thing. And then I would come back to the key messages of the report, and this was one of it, is that, of course, equity issues is more important, and I think it's an issue also both for Europe, for Finland, and also for the rest of the world. So to put more research efforts on equity issues, this, to understand, do we still have no data for children with disabilities? This is a major issue. We still miss data on refugee children. And even within Europe, we still miss data about refugee children. Countries do not collect it. How we will know what to do about this? And even ethnic minorities go and collect data. I have to write about Roma children this year, and I can tell you that it's a real struggle. And Roma children are not new in Europe, so... Is that, I mean, there are a lot to do about equity, about financing, of course. We need to make sure that we spend our resources more efficiently. Thank you.
Thank you. We may have one final comment. Could I ask one of our student assistants who have been so effective in organizing this? And as you heard, our students have already read the summary before they came to this seminar here today. Could I ask one of our students to say the word of thanks? Do we have Victoria or Pukraj around? Yes? Well, we'll have the word of thanks from outside coming in. But you know what we have done today? We have been online all this time, and we are going to be online until 5. We'll have a half an hour break. And we do have, so our colleagues in other universities also... At our partner universities, at our partner organizations, we've been openly online all the time. And also our roundtable this afternoon will be online. And we also do have participants who are attending in the corridors here, because we are broadcasting through the monitors to the hall and the lobby over here. But could I ask Pukraj and Victoria, because you've been the most active ones organizing this, would you like to say thanks to our guest, our main speaker of today?
Definitely not prepared for this. It's really nice to see everyone here, and just we were watching the interactions from outside, and there are already some 20, 30 people watching the whole presentation from outside, and all sorts of applause and questions we have, which potentially you can take over the tea and refreshment break, but... From our side, thank you. This just means a lot to us to kind of have you here and have all this crowd and make this interaction possible. So So thank you from my side. Do you want to? It's okay.
Yes, thank you. Also from my side, it was very interesting to listen to your presentation. And it's great that so many people are coming and engaging and interacting. Thank you.